Straight from South Africa.
This is the strange and mysterious world with your hosts, Lee Straighten and William Pollinson.
So welcome to season one, episode 25 of Strange Mysterious World. Tonight we're going to be discussing technologies, forbidden technologies. And it's actually quite sad when you go through a couple of these things, William. You know, some of the guys that have come through and then tried to make humanity a little bit of a better place. And, you know, we might have been in a very different path had we followed some of these guys. It just seems to be there's always someone in the way or something in the way of progress for the good. It always seems to take us down a path of not so good. I don't know if you find that in the research that you've been doing, but I did it. Where we could be now, it's bad, dude.
It is quite shocking, especially like this. It just seems to all add up in like just greed and, well, who knows? Who knows what's really behind the thing? But it's usually, it looks to me like just the one opposition is always more powerful, and it seems to take over, and it's all about money.
Yeah, well, that's it. It's all about money. It's not about the benefit of humanity. It's just about the money. It's just about how rich I can get, how quick. And if somebody interferes with that, how I need to eliminate that problem so that it doesn't interfere with my riches. You know what I mean? So that's just, it's like so poor. And it's, and I was saying to someone the other day, actually yesterday, I was chatting to someone. And you know that there's that saying where human beings are inherently good? I disagree completely. I think humans are inherently bad. I'm on the total other opposite side of that equation.
What burnt you? Because if we were all inherently bad, we would all be just sacrificing each other, drinking each other's blood, stabbing.
No, I think I think there is certain laws that we follow because we're a bit afraid to do the things that we would do because of repercussions, which is a good thing because I mean you're only going overboard. But people are generally good because they're going through a good phase of their life. So when things are going good, you're always good. But when things are tough, a lot of people turn to a bad side to get through whatever, however they can get through, it becomes one for yourself. I'm sorry. It's something that I've noticed over the last few years. And as much as people are trying to say no, but people, you know, and yes, they are. People are beautiful. They're friendly and kind. And yes, but that's because things are going well. When things don't go well, it's not so.
Person in the corner, they'll.
Yeah, and it's a sad thing. I mean, it's sad. I mean, the first thing we got to chat about, there was a guy by the name of Viktor Grobennikov. He was a Russian guy. He was very fanatical about the insect world. Okay, he was doing a lot of research and stuff into the insect world, and there were a couple of things that he actually invented that could have been very beneficial to us. The first thing, he was out one day, he was lying on the grass and he got a massive headache and he got this metallic taste in his mouth and he was like quite warm. And he thought, geez, what the hell's going on here? And he dug down a little bit in the ground and he found he was actually on a beehive. It was a massive bee city underneath him. And he came to the conclusion that there was something about the structures in the natural world that emanates certain energies and power. So example, the beehive, you know, you got those conical shapes of the comb, of the honeycomb. Yes. There's certain structures have certain, yes, correct. There's certain structures have certain powers. And I don't know if you know this, there's bugs that have got those thick chitinous shells. They fly with them. So you'll see the bug will lift up his chitinous shell and you've got the wings underneath. And the wings, he flies with the wings, and then when he lands, the chitinous shell kind of covers the body for protection. And he did some research in that. And when he went onto his microscope, he actually observed that the shells have got a certain structure. The shell itself has got a certain structure, okay? And what he did was he turned the shell upside down and he tried to put another shell on top of it, but it floated. Okay.
I see the video footage of that, of the one floating on top of the other.
It floated, yeah, and over after a few seconds, it actually, as it's on top of each other, it would actually swirl to be in line.
Oh, wow.
So you put it sideways and it would turn. And apparently a couple of the experiments that he did, he went and got thousands of shells. I'm assuming he probably killed a whole shitload of insects, but which is not great. But he took a ton of these shells and put them on a structure, like a metallic structure, and it lifted the structure.
How did you go around getting, like, I wonder how many?
It must have taken him time, dude. But he put these shells underneath this metallic structure where you could stand on. And apparently the structure could lift up to around about 300 meters up, right? And it could travel at 1,500 Ks an hour, dude.
Oh my God, it's cheapest.
And the other thing about this,
anti-gravity
technology. If he was flying above you with his machine, he was basically invisible to you. You couldn't see him. Jesus, so that's stealth technology. You know, and unfortunately, a lot of the scientific community came in and slandered him for it and turned him into a lot of bullshit and X, Y, and Z, which they normally do. I mean, you know the stories. And he actually wrote a book. He persisted. He wrote a book about it. And the publishers, just before the book came out, the publishers actually withheld hundreds of diagrams and schematics that actually showed you how this thing worked. Gosh. And eventually, obviously, with the government that was in at the time, they stifled everything. So nothing came to light. But again, my opinion on that stuff is the guys probably took it to military and it was developed for military intelligence.
So, and what happened to this guy eventually?
He was granted a Russian patent in 1993 on that device containing BRF cells. They claimed to enhance the effectiveness of therapeutic drugs on patients.
Wow.
Yeah. His book was called My World.
My World.
Yeah.
Okay.
He died in 2001, but it doesn't say how.
So, I mean, it'll be interesting to go get a whole bunch of these bugs and get their wings and do like a Mythbusters thing and see if we take off. Underneath a skateboard or something and see if we...
Yeah, well, you hit the nail on the head, David, because my thought was perhaps to find some dead insects, because I would never go and kill an insect purposely just for a stupid experiment, but to find some dead, because I do, every now and then I've got beetles and stuff that, you know, like Christmas beetles and stuff that die off courses, and just go and, you know, test it out, see if it works. Do a bit of forming.
I'm sure he does something else to it. He must like charge it or something, because I mean, if that was a thing, I mean, us as kids, I mean, you're always playing with beetles and we would have all been having these little wings, making them float and stuff like that. You know, like playing around. So I'm sure.
Yeah. If we read his book, we'll probably understand what his whole thing was about. Maybe the actual structure itself was charged in some way that would activate the, which I'm assuming it must do, because if you're looking how the beetles fly, they don't fly with that shell. That shell is just a protective cover. So they're flying with their wings that are underneath the shell. So there must be some sort of motion that's going on above the shell so that it gets the shell to levitate. Must be.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't think it's just going to, you're probably going to plonk a shell on top of each other and they're just going to fall flat. And then there was another thing which was very interesting. It was called the hemp car. Actually, I love that idea. This came from Henry Ford.
If you crash and your car sets on fire, you can just sit there and just get high and not worry about the accident.
the thing with this car, dude, is the tensile strength of this hemp car was 10 times stronger than steel.
Yes, because I remember when I first heard about this thing that he had, there was a video of him, like actually there's video footage of actually Henry Ford with a sledgehammer smashing the car, the bonnet, and then nothing happens to it. And then there's a guy next to just wiping it every time he smashes it with the sledgehammer, and there's not even scratches on it.
Correct.
I remember when I first saw it, I was like, what the freaking hell? This actually, it's him, Henry Ford. And I mean, I think what happened to this hemp car? It sounds too good to be true.
Yeah. So he at that stage, this was like in the 1940s. So obviously the war was still going on. He was quite concerned about the environmental impact of you know, what was going on at the times, obviously with ships and coal and all sorts of things. And he tried to develop this vehicle that would run on biofuel. So it would actually run on the cannabis seeds. They would obviously have to crush it down, and it would become almost like Back to the Future. You remember when they had all those, like a different type of fuel that these guys could use? It wasn't the normal petroleum and the normal things that the guys were using. And the footprint then would be like so minimal and very, very cost effective, very, very light. So, you know, and again, the guys that got involved there, because they launched, I think they launched their first, that first experiment, or the launch edition. They launched that in 1941, and it worked well. Okay, people were like really like excited about this this whole thing. But obviously, petroleum interests got involved, and the project was shut down, and nothing ever came of it, the hemp car. Because it was actually combined with hemp and other plant materials. And it was actually biodegradable. So the plant, it's the car over time, over probably 100 years, 50, 100 years, would actually start degrading, and it would be good for the environment, because you wouldn't have all this metal and rust and all sorts of shit that's going on there.
Jeez, it's so crazy, because it's like the guy that, you know, that everyone's crying about, like the whole, you know, the what's putting all the carbon dioxide into the air, is the cars and stuff, and like the number one enemy of so-called global warming or climate change. And he's actually the one that's actually trying to make the difference to the world. And it's like, you know, before, like so long before his you know, he's so far ahead of his time. I mean, I don't even think people were worried about thinking about global warming or climate change or any kind of environmental thing. And then he's actually trying to make a difference back then. And yeah, and obviously he gets squashed.
Yeah.
THC petrol.
Well, like you said, you could get high, you know, stop at the side of the road and just sniff a bit of your car.
Yeah. So if you get it, you got like a back pain, or you got some kind of pain, you can just get, you know, go to the fuel tank and just have a little sip. And, you can't sleep at night, or you're like, you know, stuck on the side of the road, and you kind of want to have a good night's sleep in your car. You just have a little swig of the petrol.
Yeah.
THC oil, and you have a nice, the good nap.
Oh, so it was actually beneficial for everything. Good night's sleep to fuel saving. But like I said,
saving the environment.
Yeah, but the problem is there again, your oil conglomerates got involved there, and it was shut down pretty quickly. Then there was a guy, he really, really followed Tesla's work. Okay, it's a guy from the 1920s. His name was Henry Morey, T. Henry Morey. And he developed a device that apparently, according to him, could tap into the cosmic energy. It would constantly run. There would never be a need to charge a battery. You know what I mean? It was just a constant running free energy platform.
Wow.
And apparently he did an experiment where he empowered lights, radios, and vehicles. So it worked. But guess who stepped in? Yeah, he was discredited by the scientific community. Yeah, he got sabotaged. Even though there were numerous witnesses to say the stuff worked, they all said, no, it's a lot of cuck, a lot of shit. And his labs were ransacked and his stuff was stolen. And obviously, his support ran out. So his support, his money and all that ran out. People stopped supporting him. And that was it. That was the end of his generator, or end of that machine that he was developing. So again, I mean, yeah, back in 1920s, this is 100 years ago, dude.
Wow.
Yeah, can you imagine where we would be now?
Oh, no, it's
100 years ago. Can you imagine where we would be now? Which is sad. Then there's actually a very fascinating guy. His name was Victor Schauberger. He was an Austrian. He also was very, very interested in the natural world, especially water vortexes. He used to study the vortex of water, and which he figured actually produced energy. So he used to replicate the vortex to create energy, and he developed something called the repulsion, which was a disc-shaped object that would be able to hover and float and move around using vortex energy. Now, the Third Reich were interested in this and in this technology, and they brought him across to continue his work, which he did. But he was very disheartened by them because they were using it for, for weapons and that kind of stuff, which he was not keen about. He wanted this thing to be for the people, but it never worked out like that. And then obviously when the Americans invaded, he landed up being captured. He was in prison for 9 months. The Americans, they questioned him. They confiscated all of his work and all of his experiments and all of his prototypes. And that was it. Nothing ever happened from that. But again, I'm telling you now, as much as that happened, it went underground.
Yeah.
So on top, everybody says, nah, it stopped working, but it went underground. Because that's why we're having these technologies that we're having today, that we're seeing. It's coming from all these scientists and breakthroughs that they've had, which apparently has been now discredited and no longer in use. It's not no longer in use. It is still in use.
Yeah, no, sure. Just like the remote viewing and stuff like that.
Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, he was obviously discredited by the government and all the scientific community had said, no, it's also a lot of rubbish. Okay. It's funny how back in the 15, 1600s, scientists were seen as heretics and were burned at the stake for coming up with their ideas. Because the religious people were now it's the other way around. Now that's exactly what they're doing. They're doing to their own people. Instead of taking those ideas and saying, okay, how do we run with it?
Was it inherited revenge anger?
No, but you must remember the scientists are doing it to themselves. So the scientific community has got to such a point where they think that they know everything, where they actually don't.
I know, we can't actually advance because they're just so far up their own asses.
Correct. They can only use, I understand that they can only work on things that they can measure. I understand that. If it's measurable, they can work with it. But there's a lot of, if we're going to call it fringe science, where it's not measurable, but we know it works.
Yeah.
As example, remote viewing and telepathy and all sorts of other things that sciences cannot explain it, but it works. So until we can get to a point where they can understand it, then maybe science can work hand in hand.
Yeah, I know exactly. Yeah. I mean, Dean Radin, when I interviewed him for my documentary, I mean, he was telling me that, I mean, I read both of his books, and I mean, there's a big section about his experiments that are above Six Sigma. So Six Sigma is like the standard for like, if something gets tested like over 100,000 times or whatever, and it always has the same result, like your hard drive, like if you buy a hard drive from your computer, it has to be tested that it's Six Sigma, which means that it's got like 1 to 1 million chance of it failing, like out of the box, like, you know, using it. So he's done experiments that are like Six Sigma and above. So like it's actually proving, like with telepathy and like clairvoyance and stuff like that, he's actually proven it like with multiple experiments, like repeated a few times, that it's Six Sigma. Like there's something to this. It's like it can be, it's not chance. It's like 1 to 1 billion to chance. And he tries to publish these papers and people weren't even like, they won't even look at it. Never mind like, I mean, if they just looked at it and then made a decision then if it's like a thing or not, they just don't even refuse to even look at it. So yeah, it's quite disheartening.
Yeah, it's actually silly. It's so stupid. But anyway, have you ever heard of a place called Coral Castle?
Is that where the guy those stones that he moved the stones and no one knew how he moved those stones and he would work alone at night time?
Yes. Yes. Yeah, correct. Edward Leeds Kellman, his name was. So it's not actually coral. It's actually made of limestone. Okay. And you're 100% correct. There are stones that he built this area with that's currently now in Florida. Some of them weighing 30 tons, stone block.
Jeez.
Now, no one saw him working with people. There is some photos of him with, there's no rocks on them though, but there are some photos of him with levers of rope and logs. And when they questioned him about it, he said, no, he understood the laws of weight and leverage. But people that have seen those photos have said there's no ways that he would lift 30 tons. As much as you can understand, the most understanding of leverage will not lift it with that equipment. There were some teenagers that said that one night sneaked around, they saw him, and those blocks, he touched them with something in his hand, and they lifted like helium balloons.
He's like some kind of
some sort of anti-gravity
pyramid building device.
Yeah. So that's look, whether that really happened, I don't, you know, whether the teenagers are talking shit, I don't know. But that for me leads more credibility than him trying to lift a 30-ton block on his own wooden rope.
Yeah, no, that's, yeah, I remember seeing that story. And I was just thinking, like, because it is like video footage of and some pictures of him with this tripod kind of.
Yeah, but there's nothing on it. It doesn't show it how it works. That's just a picture. Yeah. So that might have just been his attempt to kind of detract from what he was actually doing. Do you know what I mean? Sure, so yeah. He might have had this technology or this device that could levitate these objects, and he would just say, no, I'm using rocks and I'm using rope and wood. So that he wouldn't be questioned about it.
Yeah,
so that's kind of my opinion. Then we pop on to, there was something called a cloud breaker or cloud buster that came around in the 1950s. I think we actually still use them it's near Hardebeestpoort Dam, where the guys actually shoot at the clouds. They've got, if you live around the area every now and then, you just get these massive booms. Yeah. But apparently this guy, Wilhelm Reich, he said that there was something called argon energy that we could use. And this argon energy could also heal people, but this specifically, because he had another patent for some sort of a medicine that you could use with argon. But he did some sort of legal issues with the Food and Drug Administration, as well as the American Medical Association. But now he had developed this cloud shooter where it would shoot and dissipate the clouds and then bring rain, using argon energy.
Oh, yeah.
And he actually tested this out on a blueberry farm. They had a massive drought. And he tested it and it worked. Rained.
Jeez, like, that's cool.
But now the problem is, he ended up going to jail because of the FDA and the Medical Association, because he was practicing without a license, practicing medicine and stuff without a license, because obviously that was for his other thing. And obviously with this Cloudbuster, they said it was a lot of bollocks. The scientific community came back and said it was a lot of bollocks. But we're still using it Hardebeestpoort Dam.
We must actually go and have a look there and we'll get someone, a hold of someone, and we go and like...
Go and shoot the shit out of the clouds.
You just go talk to somebody and find out what's going on there.
And then in 1990, believe it or not, you know General Motors, GM?
Yeah.
They actually developed an electric car. It was called the EV1.
When? What day was this?
It was in 1990.
Jeez.
But it stopped quickly because according to them, they said, oh no, the battery wasn't good enough to get the distances. So instead of getting people involved with the battery and saying, okay, how do we develop a battery that can actually maintain this? They were told to get every single vehicle that had been sold or given to people, and they needed to crush it and destroy the evidence. So everything they had to get destroyed. So you can see, you obviously know who got involved there. It was obviously the oil conglomerates again, because they can't.
Yeah, but that's why, a lot of people hate Elon Musk. And I personally think he's great. But the thing is, people hate him, but I'm just...
Why do they hate him? What is the problem?
It's mainly the work community, because he's against all of the wokeness.
Oh, that's why I love
him. But the thing is that, he's gone through so much adversity in his life. I mean, to get to the top... Also, people hate him because he's the one... You know, when they say that he's the 1% of the world, the elite that has all the money and, he didn't steal that money from anybody. He's worked bloody hard to get there. And he's obviously, you've gone through so much adversity to be in that position, in the position of power that he's in. Because, if you are going to take on the petrol and the fuel industry with your battery-powered cars, you've got to imagine what kind of shit he was put up against to go through all of that. And he's overcome, amazing, things to get where he is, you know? It's not like he just, went around stealing all of our money to get there. He's actually...
Use his own money.
to get there. So, I mean, that's also why people hate him, because he's the so-called 1%. But it's like, yeah, well, you know, if you went through what he probably went through, he's probably gone through a lot of shit to get there, you know?
Yeah, 100%. And like you said, he's using his own money. It's not like he's getting funds from everybody else. He's used his own cash, yeah, his own bucks. So I've got a lot of respect for that man. I do.
Yeah, me too.
So cigarettes, when they first came out, they were like the talk of the town. Everybody was smoking cigarettes.
Now, yeah, there was I mean, the doctors are smoking cigarettes. There's even adverts of doctors saying, like, correct, yo, you smoke Stuyvesant and you, yeah, you'll be healthy. And they gave it to pregnant women to say, like, this is good for to keep your nerves down for the baby's,
yes,
sake and everything. I mean, that's
yeah. Yeah. So I remember going to the movies when I was young, and they had these cigarette ads. And I must say, I will give them one thing. The advertising was absolutely brilliant. That Peter Stuyvesant ad with a Boeing, the Concorde that comes in and it goes to France, and the guy that actually talks, it's absolutely phenomenal. Their ads were brilliant. So they had very good advertising skills.
Yeah.
But now, okay. Now I was going to say, now, back in 1955, there was actually a guy by the name of Dr. James D. Mould. He invented something called Project XA, or a palladium cigarette.
Alien cigarettes from the Pleiades.
Yeah, from the Pleiades. Nice. Just brought down by the aliens from the Raelian movement.
I say, yeah, it was to infiltrate humanity and make us all sick.
Yeah. But anyway, so he had this palladium cigarette. So what he had actually done is he had done extensive research on the carcinogenic issues regarding cigarettes, so the cancer-causing things in cigarettes. And he had developed a cigarette that had no cancer-causing things. He had got involved with a company called Leggett, I think it was called. And they were going to roll this out, because they were a cigarette company and they saw the benefit of this. They said, okay, this is actually a good idea. Because the research that was coming through from doctors was saying, it's not, you know, this is where the kickback started coming against the cigarettes. They're saying cigarettes is not healthy. It's causing cancer. It's causing all sorts of problems. But then the tobacco industries had their own doctors come forward and say, oh, no, it's actually good for you. Most doctors smoke Camel, you know, all sorts of stuff. So they had their own reports that came through and said, no, it's not.
Yeah, I remember that, because there was that, they actually hired, but it's like that, they're using that trick in everything now, in all of the food that we're eating.
Yes.
And I mean, all the climate change, because you never know if it's a real thing or not, because there's you know, different sides of the coins, like paying people to do their research they want and for the outcome they want. I mean, so we actually don't know anything about anything in our world, because it's all driven by money and it's all been manipulated.
Yeah.
But so, like, I think that's a clear example of, like, the cigarette companies paying scientists to say, like, no, this is good for you. And then we all just lap it up and just, like, and just a bunch, yeah, just a bunch of idiots that can't think for ourselves.
Yeah, that's where we are. Now, obviously, Leggett or Liggett or whatever you want to call these guys, they were approached by the tobacco industries, because you must remember the tobacco industry is a massive industry at that time. And they threatened to pull out their support. So Leggett pulled support for the cigarette. So it never made it to the light of day, the cigarette. So again, that could have changed the whole, you know, the whole outcome of, I mean, even if you look at today with the stupid vaping, where people have gone from cigarettes now to vaping. Vaping's actually even worse than smoking a cigarette. Do you know that?
Oh, yeah.
It causes bubbles in the lungs.
He's like, yeah, I mean, I saw anything putting in anything else but oxygen in your lungs can't be healthy.
No, so, you know, it's anyway, so they had the technology to go in a route where it could have been probably not the best thing to do, but a lot more healthier than what they're currently doing. But they decided the tobacco companies were not making their money. So they've got to squash whatever good stuff comes. It's got to be squashed.
Yeah.
All right. Then we move on to my favorite dude is always old Nikola Tesla. This guy is like such an underrated guy. And unfortunately, he had started developing his electricity, but he wanted Wi-Fi electricity, free electricity that could be gathered from the atmosphere and it could go around the world. And he said it would need about 30 towers of probably around about 100 meters high to develop this 30 towers around the world, and we'd all have free electricity, all of us. So we would never have to pay. But the problem is the people that were now seeing the dollar signs for paid electricity they were having none of that. It's like, no. Because JP Morgan, who were the guys that were quite initially were heavily involved with him and saw that the Wi-Fi was the way to go, especially with communications and that, they pulled their funding. Only to come back into 2024 and find that Wi-Fi communications has been happening for the past, like, how long? How many years?
Yeah, exactly.
So we're 80 years behind where they could have actually invested in something and we could have been far more advanced where we are now. And our electricity, we wouldn't need to be paying a cent.
Yeah, but you know what? It's so funny because, like, I mean, firstly, when there's always like some kind of big, like, breakthrough in the world anywhere, it's funny that there's actually, it's like some people have come up with that same idea all over the world, and they're almost all on the cusp of it at the same time.
Yes, it's the case you feel.
Someone that breaks. So you think it's like, oh, that guy like figured it out, but there was actually like 20 other guys. It's like, it's almost like in the morphic field or whatever you want to call it.
The case you feel.
Collective consciousness or whatever, and if you inclined to think that way, you pick it up, and then you kind of like, oh, this is a great idea. But there's like 20 other guys that have got that same thing
around the world,
whatever, and they're all working on it at the same time. And it's funny how he had the idea for wireless one, and the other guy had a wireless. But then what also makes me just so honored about it is that, like, there's been so many extremely intelligent people after that studying in those fields, and no one has ever like cracked it. Or maybe they have and we just haven't heard about it and they've been squashed as well. But like, you would think that, you know, if that one guy could figure it out then, like, surely since then there must have been so many other guys. I mean, because universities have got better, there's been hundreds.
It's funding. That's what it's all about. You need the funding to be able to continue with. So Tesla's ideas have worked on a small scale. People have managed to do it because obviously they can't be building these 400-foot towers with no money. So they build these small, and they can, and it works with the small things. But when they go for funding to try and get the stuff, it's always squashed because the electrical companies cannot have that because the governments pull money in from electricity. I mean, we at our house, dude, and it's just the two of us, we pay almost 3,500 rand a month for electricity. That's just electricity. And what do we use? We watch a bit of TV, and it's a couple of lights here and everywhere. Now, can you imagine 3,500 rand for the year? It's close on 40K. Now, per household, 40,000 rand times how many million? They'll lose out big time. They can't afford it. They can't afford to have free electricity.
Yeah, but you know what's so interesting is that, firstly, when you do come up with like a thing like this to somebody, they actually don't believe it, so they won't fund it. But there's like, I know old Stephen Greer, his whole push now is that to find the zero point energy or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And he's saying you must put it on as don't paint in it because the patent office in America is rigged. And like, because that's actually, one of the main reasons why they have the patent office is like, so that it can all be scanned by like the powers that be. And if it's anything that's threatening or like anything that they feel that it could become too powerful or if it is technology they already have and they're trying to keep it secret for security reasons, like
inverted commas,
ears on each side, that they can see it and they can squash it immediately or take it and whatever. So nothing can actually get through the patent office. That's a great, huge breakthrough because it'll just be either squashed or taken. So Stephen Greer's thing is that he just put it on, what did you call it? Like a crowd, like it just on the internet and you just distribute it freely. It's called among free source.
Open
source. So then everybody gets it at the same time. So he's on that whole mission. But then there was that guy, I don't know if you watched the first Thrive documentary. It was so great. I don't know. The second one, I don't think it was the third one. The second one went a bit too woo-woo for me. But the first one.
Thrive. So who did it? Awesome. Who did it?
It's like these two old buddies, him and his wife. Maybe we should actually discuss it on the show. But the Thrive documentaries, one and two, they're really, really amazing. And there was this one guy in Zimbabwe, of all places. I think the second one's actually about free energy. And they went around looking at all the places that have actually found free energy. And there's this one guy in Zimbabwe. he actually pulled it out of, I mean, he knows how it works, but they actually went to Zimbabwe and they went to speak to him. And he had this, he could show the whole contraption, how it was running and everything. But when he started the company, him and his buddy, they both got poisoned.
Okay.
And his buddy died and he somehow survived. And he's been like scared for his life ever since, but he's managed to make this thing. And I wonder what's ever happened to him. We must actually go and have a look. But it's in the Thrive, I think Thrive 2 documentary, yeah.
Actually, talking about the water thing, there was a guy that developed a water car. Stanley Meyer had developed the vehicle and was actually on TV. They had it on the news. They had it on, you know, the social, not social media, all the media at the time, the newspapers, that this guy had actually developed a water car. And he showed it worked.
Yeah,
I mean, the news crew were there. Everything was there. He showed how it worked. The General Motors and all these guys had gone to him and were looking to buy this technology from him. He did not. And he was poisoned. So him and his family were at a restaurant. Something happened. He grabbed his throat. He went running outside. I think he turned to his brother because his brother went running after him. And he said, "They've poisoned me." And he collapsed and he died.
Yes,
and they said he died of an aneurysm. So I don't know how you die of an aneurysm when you're holding your throat. That doesn't make sense. So yeah, can you imagine water, a car from water? There was another one. There was another guy that had actually developed something called the Ogle generator. And it was also a water-based where you could use any water, rainwater, fresh water, sea water, toilet water, whatever water you could use, dude, it would run this carburetor. All he did
it was just like in the desert and you just pee in the tank.
Yeah.
Like you just,
that's it.
And then you're off.
And you can run and you could go, dude. So so apparently with that one, all he took the, because the fuel, the combustion with the fuel, it kind of the fuel gets vaporized with this machine of his, so that he would take the fuel line and the combustion line off and he put a box in. And this box developed, it would actually vaporize the fuel and then allow the combustion from the engine to work. But again, he was also taken out. Yeah. And then your favorite guy, dude. Can you guess? Can you guess who's your favorite inventor? You talk about him quite often. Royal Raymond Rife.
Oh, Rife. Jeez, I was thinking about who invented the pizza, or I was trying to think of
So Royal Raymond Rife, he actually developed a microscope. So before he developed that whole cancer machine, the one that could actually help with cancer, he had developed this microscope. Okay. Yes, known for developing microscopes that this microscope could zoom in 60,000 times at that time, which the best electron microscope could not do anywhere near. And this allowed him to view the bacteria and the viruses in their living environments. And he used to actually film it. He would take like clips of film. He could see how they would develop. And then he actually developed this machine where you could almost laser beam this specific cell of cancer or whatever other pathogen was in there. And it would destroy that cancer cell because it had a certain frequency, a certain vibration that he had. And his theory, and this is my understanding of the world, everything has a specific frequency, everything. From this watch that I'm wearing, to these glasses that I'm wearing, to the hat, to me, to whatever. We all have a specific frequency. And he reckoned that cancer has a frequency, which I agree 100%. And if you could actually match the frequency of that cancer, you would be able to blast the cancer without destroying anything around it. So all the cells around it would still be perfectly healthy. And apparently he developed that and he did an experiment with 16 people that had cancer and all 16 people were healed. But again, who steps in? Who has to step in?
Big Pharma.
American Medical Association. As it's a lot of crap. This doesn't work. His stuff got ransacked. His lab was set on fire. He got taken to court because he is not a practicing doctor. So legally, he got taken down. So, dude, again, stifled.
And he died of alcohol. He died drinking himself to death.
Yeah, well, apparently
so. Depressed.
Apparently, so with drugs and alcohol. But people that knew him said, no, that's not him. Not at all.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, even the what is that? What is the museum that confiscates everything and
Smithsonian? And
the Smithsonian. So yeah, they apparently that is microscopes at the Smithsonian lab.
Yes, it is.
And yeah, with that Rife machine, it's there's a doctor here in Cape Town.
Just don't mention names. You got to put him under threat.
No, but that's the thing. Because I wanted to bring him on here as well, and he's built a Rife machine. And okay. And I went and I checked it out, and he did a thing on me. I mean, like, I don't have cancer, touch wood, but like I put it on my body and tried it out or whatever. And he's actually selling them, but the one in his office is like this big plasma thing. It like lights up, and it's like it's got, you can see this plasma fusion in the middle. It's like amazing to look at.
Yeah.
But he and I wanted to do something with him, like a documentary or, you know, interview him or whatever, and he says he's too scared because, and he's actually a proper doctor. He's like, you know, he's a doctor.
Yeah.
And he's got this machine, and he's made it, and he says no because he doesn't want anybody to come after him, and he doesn't want his, you know, he's a doctor, he doesn't want to be like his license to be taken away, or you know, so he would rather not. But the thing is, my uncle had cancer, or he has got cancer, and he lives in Malmuth, which is like very far away from Cape Town. And Malmuth is actually there by you. How far is that from Cape Town? It's bloody far. But anyway, so he has cancer, and they're trying everything and nothing's working or whatever. So when he came to Cape Town for Christmas, because his children are here,
mm-hmm.
I said, I said, why don't you just try this Rife thing? Like, what have you got to lose or whatever? So I eventually convinced him and his wife, my aunt, to go there. And they went and he did three Rife sessions with this doctor.
Yeah.
And they said every time he did it, that he would just have like diarrhea for like the whole day, like after the session.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he went back to Malmuth, they did another scan on him, the doctor's scan, and the doctor came up to him and started crying. This is my aunt. I found my aunt, and my aunt said, you know, no, the doctor came up and hugged him and started crying. The doctor's crying, saying like, he can't believe it. It's a miracle. The cancer's shrunk. And I said, you see, it's the Rife machine. I got all excited. I was like, check, it's the Rife machine. And then she was like, you know, typical, like if anything happens, like just I can't believe it. So she says to me, no, we don't know what it is. It could be this. It could be the chemo. It could be the necrotic. And I'm like, well, I don't know. That nothing else has been working. And like you did this and now your doctor's crying, saying it's a miracle that it's shrunk. Like, I mean, come on. Like, are you guys insane? Like what else could it be? And anyway, if it is all of those things, you've got to try it, do all of it now and the Rife machine. But they had to go back to Malmuth and they hadn't had a chance to come back. And then eventually they came back, but it was like 6 months later and he did another three sessions and his cancer's like in remission, or I don't know what you call it, but he's off the remission. Chemo. They've taken him off the chemo and they've taken him off everything.
Yeah.
But I'm saying it's that Rife machine. Like
I agree. Most of the time chemo, you know, a lot of the times chemo doesn't work, dude. All it does is it kills everything. It actually starts killing you.
It kills you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And for me, that's not the natural way. That's not, yeah. So if somebody had actually developed a Rife machine where we could probably all be cured of all these shit diseases, but it can't be. Pharmaceutical companies can't have that. Doctors cannot have that.
Yeah.
You remember, doctors are not there to cure you at all. If they cured you, you would never go back. You know what I mean? If you were like me and touch wood now, I haven't been to a doctor besides for certain procedures, but you know, for illnesses, I haven't been to a doctor in 35 years. That for me, I'm the worst oak to be around doctors because I don't make money for them. Doctors have to make money. It's all about money, dude. So they are there to put a blanket on the cure, on the thing. So they'll give you tablets. That's probably makes you dependent on the tablets. Yeah. It will help with the cure, but it's not going to cure it. But if you can stay on those tablets for as long as possible before you die, that's a good couple of million that they're making from you. Which for me, and I'm sorry. It's just it's unethical and it's just fucking disgusting. Disgusting.
They are good for like if you have a car accident or you need to,
of course,
badly
brain
injured
surgeons,
or something. But,
yes.
But other than that, they actually don't know what the fuck's going on.
Yeah. Because I mean, you go there, you've got flu. So when I've got flu or bronchitis, I never go to a doctor, ever. I just sit at home and wait it out, and then it kind of goes on its own. I will never go to a doctor and never get tablets and never get any of that shit.
I mean, anyway, all they do is they give you the medication to hide the symptoms until you just heal yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. No, okay, look, let's put it this way.
I mean, if they put you on antibiotics, that's a different story.
Yeah.
I mean,
when you've got the medical practitioners that are like their specialists, that's, you know, if you've had a broken arm, they fix your break. If you've got issues with your lungs and they've got to cut out a piece of the lung, you know, those kind of things. I understand it. That is life-saving things. And that's, yes, it's necessary. If you had a car accident and half your brain is stuffed, those have to go in and take your eyeball out and, you know, whatever. That's good stuff to do. But I'm talking about in general, just your GPs, practitioners. I'm like not a fan, dude.
No, of course. I have not a clue what's going on.
Yeah. But anyway, how's your remote viewing? Mine's been going terrible.
Oh, mine's also like, I've had a few cool sessions.
Yeah.
Where's my iPad?
I've had it bad, dude. It's been bad. All been wrong. Everything's been wrong.
Serious?
Yeah.
I got the whole side of a building, like the shape and everything. And it was the building. And then I got like, these like little triangles. And then when the picture came out, it was a crab and its legs were making like all these triangles. So I've had like a few good sessions, but yeah, then I mean, today when I did it this morning, it was a really bad one. So I suppose you just get some days, eh? Something. They're just got to be mindful of what.
The Muse meditation is running well.
Oh, yeah? Are you still
very,
Muse?
Very, very. Yeah, right? Still Muse. It's literally every night, dude.
So how's your graph going? Are you
It's going
better,
well. It's going well, well. Those birds come very frequently. I'm getting between 49, 50 birds for 15 minutes. It's going very, very, very well. I must be honest.
What meditation are you doing?
So I listened to that. If you look at the bottom of that Muse app, there's actually a thing where you can go onto. It says mind, body, heart. If you click on there, it gives you a whole lot of things. Like you can have sitting in a cave where you can hear the water dripping. Or underneath that, you can have a cave with water dripping with music. Or you could be sitting on a beachside listening to the sea, or you could have the beachside listening to the sea with music. So I always take the one with the music, because the music is very like mellow. It's very like, and you can hear the dripping of the water from the stalactites. You can hear all of that. And it's actually, it echoes like you're in a cave. So when you close your eyes, it actually feels like you're in a cave.
And then do you do any kind of visualization or concentration?
No, I just try and block it out. I just try and blank out.
So what do you do? So not even like focusing on your breath? You just kind
no,
of...
I do focus on breath. I do, but I'm not really, because I'm so used to now breathing like in slowly, I don't count anymore. I used to count like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 in, and then 1, 2, you know, I used to do that. I used to count it in my head.
Okay. Yeah. So
but I don't do that anymore. Now it's just like a blank screen, and it's, I'm breathing very, very slowly. So my average heart rate in my meditation sessions is about 49 beats a minute.
Wow. Jeez, but you're quite, that is fit, eh?
Fuck yeah. So that's my average.
But you do a lot of exercise. Though,
I do.
But and you're a vegan.
And I'm a vegan. So that does help. The remote viewing, I figured something out because I was getting a bit frustrated. I was like, I realized that the time of day is quite important, and the room you're sitting in is important. So you remember I told you I tried to do that remote viewing on the plane when you had sent me that stuff.
Yeah.
I couldn't do it, dude, because there was so much noise coming from the plane. You know, you got that massive buzzing when you can hear the plane going. Even though I tried to put the earphones in, I could still hear that buzzing.
Yeah. I can't even wear headphones because I can't even hear anything with the freaking noise of that airplane.
Yeah. And then the light around you is bright. So I also figured out when I was sitting in the room, in my meditation room, and it's like normally morning, but it's bright around me. And even though my eyes are closed, everything is bright. So I realized I think I've got to do it just before I do a meditation session. I've got to do it before that, because if I do it after that, I don't see anything. Because of the meditation that I keep blanking out everything, when I go into viewing, it's just blank. I don't see any images. I don't see nothing's happening.
They usually say it's better after you meditate.
I think
that's interesting.
Yeah.
But with the meditation, so what is your percentage? Because it gives you a percentage of how long you stayed in alpha or...
On average, okay, so I do a 15-minute session all the time. I don't go higher than that. 15 minutes is where I stop. Okay. On average, 10 minutes is calm. About three minutes is neutral. And then about a minute or two is active.
Oh, well, that's amazing, dude. And how did you start off? What was the first ones like?
You must remember I've always been meditating. So I have meditated, but not to this extent where, so originally it would be slightly less. I would probably have maybe about 6 minutes calm, 6 minutes neutral, and 3 minutes active. So it's getting more and more calm. The neutral is also dropping.
But anyway, so for our viewers that don't know what the hell we're talking about, is there's this Muse headband. You put it on your head and it actually monitors your brave wave frequencies through like some kind of, I don't know, whatever, but it's on your head. And obviously your alpha, your theta is your deepest. Well, delta is when you're sleeping.
Yeah.
Theta is when you're in extremely like meditative, like thing, and it's just before delta when you're sleeping, and then alpha is your relaxed state, which is just a normal meditative state, and your beta is when you're like thinking, your normal thinking realm, where you, like me and you now, we're in beta. And then there's gamma, which is actually a frequency higher than beta. It's like more, because like a delta, the frequency is very low and like a very wavy kind of thing. Then at theta, it's going a little bit more. The frequency rises, alpha more, beta more, then gamma is like extreme, but gamma is actually what, when they monitor monks and extremely high advanced meditators, people go into gamma states, which is like when you're probably like a transcendental state, or when you like, I don't know, you've probably working on another planet or something. But so that's what the Muse headband does. It measures that, and you can sit there with an app and you can actually check your brainwave frequencies, and it tells you if you are in a theta, alpha, whatever state you are, and it will measure that and give you a percentage at the end how well you did with your meditation.
Yeah. So I do that often, I must be honest. I do that very, very often, the Muse.
I used to do it all the time, and it was very helpful for me. I'm glad you're enjoying it though.
I must be honest there. Yeah, that was a good
gift. It's nice to track it because you can see the graph like after a few months, you can see it because it shows you in a graph like if your meditation is getting better or it's really cool.
Yeah. But yeah, I try and aim for those birds as much as possible to hear those birds chirping, because every time the bird chirps, that means you're in a meditative state.
Yeah, it's funny because that's funny because you find it like good, but whenever I went to meditative state and the stupid birds came up, I used to find it so irritating because it would take me out of my state. I'm like, oh my god, what's that noise?
No, I actually listen for it. So I breathe and I wait, and as soon as I hear it, okay, cool. So I count to my fingers one.
Oh, that's good because that's what part of a meditation is, like also being aware of what's around you. You use it for your meditation.
Yeah.
That's great. So, I used to just turn it off and then just check at the end how I did.
Nah, I prefer the birds because when I don't have birds, I get aggravated. So if I'm sitting there and I'm like waiting and I'm waiting and I'm concentrating and I don't hear birds for like a minute. I'm thinking, fuck, man, what's going on? What's going on? My mind's too active. What's happening? Where's my birds?
Oh, that's cool, man. Yeah. Jeez, we should be salesmen for Muse.
Yeah, shit. They should send us the new one.
Yeah, she's into this podcast. See if we get it.
Yeah,
give it. Cool, man.
No, awesome, man. Thanks, bud. For the day, and thanks to all of you guys out there listening to us as per usual. And it's really, really great to have you guys listening. And I hope you enjoyed your discussion for today. And we'll chat to you next week. Well, thanks to Span again, man. We'll see you next week. Thanks, guys.
Sweetly, catch you later, man.